he said that he had to catch a check yet.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. I'm not in dire need. I can fire.
You're not in dire need.
That's
good. Yeah, I get paid Friday, so
I'm not. No, I'm not. I don't care.
Why do I
think this is fun? I don't think
a little bit.
Frank, did you get that book back I put in your box?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
With all the parallel studies that you bring in with each one that you would do, you'd end up going through the Bible probably 1,000 times
yeah,
each, you know.
That'd be great.
I didn't hear it. I'm sorry. I've been waiting for it to buzz, and I never.
It did ring.
I didn't hear it. Okay, then. Welcome back to Biblia Hebraica 2. I mean, Methodist Research 2. Now, before I forget, I'll pass the rule book here. Okay, I won't have you pass your assignments in quite yet because you may want to use them for reference during the class today. It's going to be another... I'll be worried about that later. It's going to be another rather unstructured session this week like it was last week where we're discussing the assignments and discussing research tools in conjunction with that. The first thing I want to do... is pass some handouts out to you. The majority of your surveys that you turned in mentioned the need to understand how to use Biblia Hebraica or Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia. So I felt that, because that was the case, it was worth, even at the risk of some overlap with Hebrew orientation, if there is any there, or with ATP, which I'm sure there is there, giving you a little bit of understanding about this book, and I certainly don't claim to be a master of it myself, but I'll try to impart some understanding of it to you if I can. So, first thing I want to pass out is, none of these have file numbers because they're just straight photocopies that I just made, so the first thing I'm going to pass out is from Biblia Hebraica, and it's the key to the signs that are used in the text and the versions that are referred to in the text. The next thing I'm going to pass out is photocopies of the first page of the text in J. Green's Interlinear Hebrew Bible, which contains Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 through 11, part of 11. So as soon as you get this, you should write on it what it is so you don't get it mixed up with the other things I'm going to pass out. So this is from J. Green, that three-volume red Hebrew Interlinear. Yes.
Do you know how much that costs at Christian Discount?
At Christian Discount?
No, I don't know.
The Interlinear.
Three volume.
It's around $40.
About 40?
Is it? About 43 for that.
I heard that's 26.
This one?
Yeah.
It's crystal. Not the last one.
I got it.
Anyway, so you might want to write on that J. Green's Interlinear so you'll know what that work is. And this is from Volume 1, and it's just the very beginning of his text, of the Hebrew text, starting with Genesis. If you've never used Green's Interlinear, it's not set up like a Hebrew Bible where you start at the back of the book, what we would consider the back, and work forward, but it's in regular order, like from the front to the back, in order of pagination in the Hebrew books, although the text itself is still read right to left, as you would in the other text. Now, the next thing I'm going to pass out is the same page from Kittel's Biblia Hebraica, 3rd edition. Okay? So this is the beginning of the book of Genesis from Kittel's Biblia Hebraica. Alright? So be sure you write that on there. Biblia Hebraica by Kittel. Because if you don't, you're going to get it mixed up with this next thing I'm going to pass out. The next thing I'm going to pass out is the same page from the Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia, which is not the same as Kittel's Biblia Hebraica. Okay? So when you get this last one, you want to write Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia. Okay? On that. And by the way, Kittel's Biblia Hebraica is usually abbreviated BHK. Okay? BH stands for Biblia Hebraica, and the K stands for the fact that Rudolf Kittel edited it, okay? BHK. And the last one I passed out, the Stuttgartensia, is abbreviated BHS. Not Baptism of the Holy Spirit, but Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia, okay? And that's how you'll see them abbreviated in the works themselves and in other works that refer to them, and so it's good to know that. I don't know what the official abbreviation of J. Green's Interlinear is. Probably among top-notch Hebrew scholars, it's got such a low status that they don't even consider consulting it, I suppose. There's certain intellectual snobbery in some of these academic circles. Okay, now, first of all, I want to very, very briefly, if I can have your attention, describe to you what Biblia Hebraica is. And I'm not going to go into a long, drawn-out dissertation that's going to involve Old Testament textual criticism and the origin of the Hebrew manuscripts and the textual transmission. That is not within the scope of this class. So I'm going to leave a million facts unsaid, but I'm just, in a nutshell, going to tell you what Biblia Hebraica is. Of course, Biblia Hebraica means Hebrew Bible, so you know that much. You've got the Hebrew text there. It was edited by Rudolf Kittel, K-I-T-T-E-L. Rudolf with an F instead of a PH. And it has been published from 1906 on. And it was in 1937 that the important third edition of the Biblia Hebraica came out. And the importance of the third edition is that it was based on the Leningrad manuscript. The Leningrad manuscript. Now that begs the question, what is the Leningrad manuscript? The Leningrad manuscript is the oldest dated complete manuscript of the entire Bible, or what I mean is Old Testament, of course. It's the oldest dated complete manuscript of the entire Old Testament, and it dates from approximately 1008 AD. So it's one of what we refer to as the Masoretic manuscripts, okay? It's simply a manuscript of Genesis to Malachi, although, of course, in their order of the Hebrew canon, of the 24 Hebrew canonical books, which we reckon is 39, because we break up the prophets and then the minor prophets and so forth. And it is apparently a copy of the highly accurate Ben Asher text. B-E-N Asher, capital A-S-H-E-R. Now, who is Ben Asher? Ben Asher was one of the families of the Masoretes. And you know from textual criticism who the Masoretes are, those Jews who lived in the Middle Ages, who collated and correlated the Hebrew manuscripts that had come down to them and put in the vowel pointing, the Masoretic punctuation, in the Hebrew consonantal text. And each family, there were several families of the Masoretes, and the Ben Asher family, the Ben Asher text, is felt to be one of the more, if not the most accurate, Masoretic textual text. Now, this Leningrad manuscript is so called because it is located in Leningrad, Russia, and so it's the Leningrad manuscript, a copy of the Ben Asher text of the Hebrew Bible. Now, the Biblia Hebraica by Kittel contains what is called the Masora Parva. Masora, M-A-S-S-O-R-A, Parva, P-A-R-V-A, which literally means the small Masora, and is abbreviated in the text as M small, capital M small p. Capital M, small p, refers to the Masora Parva. Now, what is the Masora Parva? Okay, these Hebrew textual scholars that we call the Masoretes developed a system of shorthand reference. They developed a system of shorthand reference mainly as a record of frequency statistics for words, forms, and phrases. For example, let's say there's a word in Genesis chapter 1 here, for example. I'm giving you a hypothetical example. Let's say there's a word in Genesis chapter 1, verse 5, and that word is found 20 times in the Old Testament. They might use the symbol in the margin to tell the informed, highly informed reader that word is found 20 times in the Old Testament. So the shorthand form of reference for statistical frequency of words, forms, and phrases is called the small Masora, or the Masora Parva. Okay? And that is found in the outside margins, not in the bottom, but in the outside margins of the Biblia Hebraica text. All right? Now, And it's given in a series of Hebrew symbols. Now, let's get on to Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia. What's the difference between the two? Well, Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia, the dates given are 1967/77. Now, I have not ascertained whether that means that it went from 67 to 77 or in 67 and 77. It would seem to be 67 and 77, otherwise you would think you'd have a dash there, meaning the whole period is involved. But in any case, 1967, 1977, and it was edited by K, first initial K, last name Elliger, E-L-L-I-G-E-R, and W. Rudolph. Now, It is the same as Biblia Hebraica in that it's the text, the Hebrew text, is still based on that Leningrad manuscript. Okay? So it's basically the same Hebrew text because it's based on the same manuscript, the Leningrad manuscript. But it is based upon a more exact reproduction of it. Okay? It's based upon a more exact reproduction of the Leningrad manuscript, and therefore it's more faithful, it's more accurate to it. Whereas in Tittle's, there were certain things that he added that weren't in the Leningrad, and there were some differences there, but not in the BHS. So there's one difference. And another difference, and perhaps the major difference, is that the BHS includes not only the Masorah Parva that I just explained to you, but it also contains what is called the Masorah Magna, M-A-S-S, or sometimes they only use one S, M-A-S-O-R-A, Magna, M-A-G-N-A. And that means, literally, the large Masorah. And is abbreviated in the book, capital M, small m. Capital M, small m. Now, what is this? The Masorah Magna is all the rest of the critical comments and lists of the Masoretes. In other words, what you have in the margin of the Biblia Hebraica does not represent the whole Masorah, does not represent all that the Masoretes added or all that they wrote in the margins of their manuscript or all the additions or all the comments or all the statistical lists or everything that was made. It represents only a small part of it, and that's why it's called the small Masorah. But the rest of it is in what we call the large Masorah. And that, you can get to that from the BHS, the Stuttgartensia edition, by a series of rather obscure references. Now here's what you need to understand. They are coming out with a four-volume work, which is called the Masorah Gedola. You're going to be so thoroughly confused by the time I'm done, you'll wish I'd never opened my mouth. Now hopefully I'm being clear enough. And if you miss something along the way, run the flag up and we'll run it by you again. Masorah Gedola, G-E-D-O-L-A. Now this four-volume work, which is, I don't think it's out yet, some of it mayn't be out yet, but this four-volume work is what contains that Masorah Magna, or the large Masorah. That's where all these lists and comments and critical comments are found. But the BHS, the Stuttgartensia edition of Biblia Hebraica, is keyed to that four-volume work that is coming out by a series of footnotes that I'll show you in a minute. And therefore, when you get the four-volume work, you can look up the word and key it from the Masorah, from the small Masorah to the large Masorah, and even from the large Masorah back to that again. It's keyed to it, just like we have reference works that are keyed to Strong's Concordance. It's the same principle. So there's another major difference between BHK and BHS. BHK only has the Masorah Parva, whereas with the new work that's coming out, you will have the Masorah Parva plus the Masorah Magna, all of the Masorah, okay? Which is those comments by the Masoretes. Now, a second difference between BHK and BHS is that BHS has revised the critical apparatus of BHK. And you know what the critical apparatus is? That's the variant readings from the versions, okay? From the Septuagint, from the Ethiopic and the other versions of the Old Testament. And that's, of course, located down at the bottom. That's your footnotes. And the critical apparatus from Kittle to the Hebraica was thoroughly revised for this BHS edition. And the main emphasis in the revision was that there is less speculation involved in the revision. Less conjecture, less retranslation on the basis of the versions. Plus, new material has been added to the critical apparatus, the BHS. In other words, there have been certain manuscript findings and so forth since the third edition, 1937, obviously, of Kittle. So So that has been added to the footnotes of BHS. Now, when you set out to use Kittel's Biblia Hebraica, one thing that you need to be aware of, and I've taken it out of it and I've got it in hand here, is this little leaflet that is inside the cover, and that is an English key to the symbols and Latin words and abbreviations of Biblia Hebraica. Because they put all these words in the Latin, and so it can be very confusing trying to understand their explanation since they're in Latin. And this is an alphabetical key explaining all these abbreviations and words in the Latin and giving you the English translation. So that's one tool that you'll need in order to use Biblia Hebraica. Apparently they have not included one with the Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia, so you need to get the key from Biblia Hebraica and use it if you're going to use the BHS edition. So that's one thing you need to be aware of to help you to work your way through this. Another thing is that on pages 45 through 48 of BHS, and that's Roman numeral pages 45 through 48, in the beginning, you have the signs explained. The abbreviations for the versions, so that when you're looking at the critical apparatus, they will not spell out Ethiopic version. You know, obviously the critical apparatus doesn't have the room to spell out the full names of the of various manuscripts and versions that they're giving you alternate readings from. And so they have adopted symbols and letters to stand for the versions in the critical apparatus. And the explanation of those, so that you know what version it is given on Roman numeral pages 45 through 48 in the Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia. And I don't know what the analogous pages would be in Biblia Hebraica, but I'm sure they do explain it also in the front of Biblia Hebraica. So that when you're trying to find, for example, for your assignment, an alternate reading for that Hosea 11:7 scripture, and you go to Hosea 11:7, and then you look down in the footnote at the bottom, you'll see symbols and signs that you won't abbreviate, that you won't understand unless you go to the key in the beginning. And then even in the beginning key, it'll give you the symbol, but then it'll explain that in the Latin again. And that's why you need that Latin key. So you go from the beginning preface to the Latin key, and from that to the English, in order to understand what manuscripts, although you can tell, a lot of them you could tell, Codex Vaticanus, we know what that is. And a lot of the Latin you could get just from knowing what the manuscript is, if you've had manuscripts and translations. Some of them you wouldn't, unless you know Latin. So that's one thing you need to... I'll tell you what I would recommend. If you really want to master, or not even master, if you want to be able to even really use with any amount of facility, the BHK and the BHS, you should sit down when you've got a good hour or two in the library, pull them both out, and read in the everything that is in the English in the front, the whole preface and introductory. First read it in Biblia Hebraica so you can follow chronologically what's going on, and it'll tell you Kittel's work on it and so forth. Then go into the Stuttgartensia edition, and they'll tell you what the major differences are and mention some things that I'm not going to mention. And then you'll have the background for what you're reading. And then acquaint yourself, familiarize yourself with the lists of abbreviations, just so you know what it's talking about. And then look up a scripture and see if you can do it yourself. Another thing you want to be familiar with in the BHS starts on it starts on page 50, Roman numeral 50, and it's an index to the signs that he uses in the Masora Parva, which is in the outside margin. Okay? And those are in the Hebrew. And that's where you're going to have the hardest time if you don't know Hebrew letters. If you don't know the Hebrew alphabet, I'll tell you what the two things that are going to be hardest, I think, to use Biblia Hebraica if you can't read Hebrew. One is the Masora Parva in the side margin where it gives you Hebrew letters and words And the only way you're going to explain, find that out is going by page 50, Roman numeral 50, and it'll give you those, and then the Latin translation of them. Then you go to that Latin key and you get the English, and you'll find out what in the world it's saying, what it refers to, whether the word is used once, or what kind of a critical statement it's making. Okay, so you'll go from page 50 to your Latin key, and then back into the English, and then you'll know what that symbol means in the Masorah Parva, small Masorah, in the Hebraica, and in the BHF. So that'll be the hardest. That'll be one of the hardest things. The second hard thing, if you don't know the Hebrew, will be in the critical apparatus in the bottom. When they give an alternate reading, they'll give the manuscripts, which you can find by looking up in the key what manuscripts are referred to or what version. But when it gives you the word, how it is differently found, the different word that is found, or words, or insertion, or whatever, or omission in the version, it just gives it in the Hebrew characters and does not transliterate it for you, which I would give the world if they had done. But they didn't, because this is really basically for Hebrew scholars, apparently, and so they didn't bother with transliterations. And it would have made an immensely larger work if they had, but still, they didn't. So you'll be able to go from the text to the critical apparatus and find out what the other versions are, but you won't be able to know what that additional word is that's found in the Septuagint in that part of the verse, or that's found in the Ethiopic version or something. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is to just write those characters down and look them up in a Hebrew lexicon, or look them up, or just have a key to the Hebrew alphabet and learn how to write the letters and then put them together and then figure out what the word is. That's about the only thing you're going to be able to do. Or cross-check with a commentary or another reference work that gives that, plus the transliteration of it, and then you've got something to go by. But those are going to be the two hardest nuts to crack, I think, in using these works if you can't read the Hebrew. Now, let's look at our handouts here. Put all three of those texts together and we'll look at them, okay? I don't want to forget to put this key back in W. Hebraic here. Have you got it there? Is that the one from the last?
Yeah.
Okay, just remind me when we're done, we'll put it in there.
When you suppose the purpose was to put it in Latin, I'm just trying to.
Well, Latin has traditionally been the language of the scholars, and it was in the last century. In fact, there was a time when every schoolboy had to take Latin, and it was just automatic that going through your grammar school, you took Latin. And so they had to have some sort of an international language that German scholars, French scholars, English scholars, Oriental scholars, although there's not too many Oriental Bible scholars, but in various languages could have a kind of an international language so that they would all kind of agree to write in that language certain reference works so that they could be read by everybody. And that lingua franca for a long time was Latin language. And to a certain extent it still is, although it's fast fading out. And there's only a few works that still persist in keeping things in Latin. But even this one has gone to the lengths of giving you a German, English, French, and Spanish translation of the entire preface and foreword in the beginning of it in BHK and BHS, as well as, I think, in Latin. So they've got about four or five languages. They put the preface and introduction. But for the main phrases and abbreviations throughout the work, they have stuck with the Latin. But at least they gave a key from the Latin to the English so that you can use it. But that's the reason why. Okay. That would be one of the things I would change, too, if I was going to see my version of BHS or BHK come out. They would transliterate every Hebrew word, not from the text. I'll tell you what the ultimate would be. Here's the ultimate work if you want to make your own customized job. It would be an interlinear, first and foremost. So you'd have the English translation. So it would have the best elements from Green's interlinear, plus there'll be a Hebraica. It would have the Masorah Parva in the margins, and that would be key to the other work, which would be too big to put in any one work. And then it would have the critical apparatus at the bottom, and you'd have to have some series of symbols for it, just like Nestle's text and UBS, still they use symbols for the manuscript. You can't write it out in full. But it would have the Hebrew additional words transliterated there, so for the help of those who don't know it. And you'd have the interlinear there with a real good interlinear translation. And it would have, instead of the Latin abbreviations and so forth in Latin, it would be in the English. And that would be really a nice work if somebody would come up with that. I doubt if they will, but...
Yeah,
Okay. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, we were going to look at these. Let's lay these three texts out and look and compare them here just briefly, see if I can explain some of the things to you. Let's see here. Get my notes organized. I'll tell you what, here's how I want you to lay them out on your desk. I want you to put Jay Green in the middle, okay? He'll be your mediator here. And then on the left, put BHK, and on the right, put VHS, because Kittle came first. So we'll look at him. And the first thing you'll notice, actually for a second, put BHK and BHS together and just look at the actual Hebrew characters and just scan the page. If you look real closely, you'll notice that it's a different typeface.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real different, but it's slightly different. They had to use a little bit different typeface in the BHS edition, and it's not as nice, really, as the one in Kittles, but the Kittles were destroyed in the war bombing in Germany or something. The type was, and then this is the new kind of electronic process of lithography, and so the typeface isn't quite as nice, and it's a little bit different in some cases, but that's one difference there in the typeface between Kittles and the Stuttgartensia. And another addition that I think you'll notice, if you lay BHK and BHS together so that you're looking just at the left-hand margins, like I've got these, the first thing you'll notice is that there are more marginal notations in the BHS than in the BHK. If you'll notice that, there's a little bit more there. In fact, they say that the marginal notations have about tripled in the BHS from the BHK. Another thing that you'll notice, and that's the Masora Parva, okay? And see that one reason for that is because, like I said, it's a more exact reproduction of the Codex L, or Leningrad Codex. And therefore they are able to be more faithful to what was in that one, in the Masora Parva. Now, another thing that you'll notice is that in the BHS, in between the bottom line of the actual Hebrew text, where it's verse 16 there, I guess, and in between that and the critical apparatus, which is at the extreme bottom, you'll see another, what looks like a critical apparatus, and it says MM2, MM3. Everybody see that? That is the key to the Masora Gedola that keys you to that larger work that's coming out. Okay? Now, how would you use that? Here's how you would use it. First off, I'm going to have to explain one other thing, and that's the superscript circles. Look at chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, Barashit. You see that word there? The very first word, it's going to be on the top line, on all the way to the right. That's the first word in the Bible. Okay? In the beginning, Barashit. Now, if you will look up above that word, there's a little circle there, a superscript circlum. You see that? Up above that Hebrew word? Actually, it's there in both Kittles, BHK and BHS. Now, what that circle indicates is that over in the margin, which is on the left of the line, there is a remark concerning that word in the Masora Parva. So that means that the Masoretes made some sort of a remark about that word. And so above the word they put a circle, which means if you want to see what they said, you look over to the left to the very first remark that you see, and that will be that one. Because remember, you always read right to left in the Hebrew. So the very first remark there is those first two Hebrew characters. You see that? And those characters are explained in the front of the book, and they will tell you whether that's saying that the word was only used one time, or whether it was used twice only, or some other statistical or other sort of remark about that word or the form or so forth. You see that? Now, one other thing you need to notice is in that remark in the Masora Parva to the left, Notice that there's the superscript one. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. There's the two Hebrew characters and the superscript one. Does everybody see that? Mm-hmm. That superscript one is what refers down at the bottom in the index to the Masorah Parva. It says chapter 1, CP 1, and then it says superscript 1, MM 1. Does everybody see that? So that is what that is keyed to. How many don't see what I just showed you? If you don't see, we want you to be able to find it. Do you see that key?
I think so. It's a little
Yeah, that superscript 1 refers to this right there. This 1, where it says MM1. Now what that means is that in that other work that they're bringing out, that four-volume work, and actually it will be in volume 1 of that work, okay? In volume 1 of that four-volume Masorah Gedolah that's coming out, if you look up the number 1 in that book, you will find all the rest of the remarks on that Hebrew word that are in the Masorah Magna, or the Great, or the Large Masorah, okay? Because, remember that I told you, in explaining the Masorah Parva, that it was a key system. It's almost like a shorthand, where one symbol can stand for one word or many words. And so that's why it's so hard for us to understand, because it's just one little symbol and it means a lot of things. Plus, it's not all the remarks that are there. So when you find that MM1, and where would you find that in volume 1 of that companion work? It would be right in the beginning. Because all they have done is keyed it numerically as to when that word is found. And since this is the first word in the Bible, they give it the superscript 1. And you might find it somewhere else. Maybe it's used in the book of Ezekiel. It would still be MM1 because it was found first in the Old Testament. And you would look in volume 1 of the Masorah Gedolah under MM1, and it would have all the rest of the remarks that the Masoretes had concerning that word. Everybody follow me? And that's how we'll key it to that work. Now, we don't have that work yet, so that's yet to come. We're waiting for that to come out. But that's what the purpose of all that is. And so that's why all the rest of that has MM references, because plus a few other remarks, which are explained in the front, because it's keying you to that Masorah Gedolah, okay? And MM, remember I told you, stood for Masorah Magna. And so it's telling you that in the large Masorah, if you look under the number 1, for example, that we looked at, you'll find the rest of the remarks on that word. So that's what that is, okay? Yes. And so you will always go to find those from the superscript numbers in the margin that are found in the Masorah Parva. But you start from the text, and that's where we start. We're looking at the text. We look at a word. And from there, we go to the Masorah Parva in the margin. From there to the index, and then when we get the other word, to the Gedolah, and then the Gedolah can even take you back to the text in other places where that word is found, and so it will bring you right back to the beginning. Question?
This one that we're doing right now, BHS, has the Masorah Parva?
Both do. Because what you have in Kittles is also the Masorah Parva. But, as I said, because BHS is a more exact reproduction of the Leningrad Codex, it's got more. It's just got a bigger Masorah Parva.
This in here has this, as well as twice as many other remarks in the left-hand margin.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Right. Exactly.
Okay, and then at the bottom, for example, this number 1, we see MM1.
Right, which is now meaningless to us. We wouldn't even bother with that right now because we don't have that companion work yet, see. But when we get it, it will key us to that work for larger remarks, for more remarks. Okay.
What's the MM1 mean? I mean, I know it means Masorah Magna, but what's it there for?
Okay, I just explained that to you, but maybe I can go by through it once more. In the Masorah Magna, they have set it up not alphabetically by the Hebrew words. All right. In other words, they haven't taken these Hebrew words that they're making remarks on and simply laid them out in an alphabetical order, which they could have done. But rather, they put them in the order that these words are found first in the Hebrew Bible. Okay? So obviously the word Barashit, in the beginning, the first place it's found in the Hebrew Bible is obviously right here, Genesis 1:1. And so that will be the very first entry in volume 1 of the Masorah Gedolah. And it'll say, and it'll be MM1, and then it'll have Barashit, and it'll have the rest of the remarks that the Masoretes had concerning that word. And that's where it'll be found in order of 1. Kind of like what they did when they keyed, well, I don't know if I should even say this, I may confuse you, but when they keyed Thayer's lexicon to Strong's Concordance, because Strong's, although there it's alphabetical, and Strong's assigned a number to each one of his words that he put in the body, and then in Thayer's they just went through and put those same numbers in so you could go from Strong's straight to Thayer's lexicon and find the same word. Well, here you're going from the from this marginal note to there to find the same word, but the words in total are not listed alphabetically, but in order of when they're found in the Hebrew Bible in that book, okay?
Okay.
And actually what's going to happen is Volume 1 will have the remainder of any statistical lists and so forth of that. Volume 2 will have more like a commentary and more remarks that are made upon it. And I don't remember what Volumes 3 and 4 are going to have in it, but be further information.
Okay, the MM1 simply means...
Masorah Magna, number 1.
All it's telling you then is that...
If you wanted to use that word, where you would find that word listed. That's all it tells you. Okay, so it's totally meaningless to us right now because we don't have the word yet.
Right, I'm thinking what they put it there for, even if we did have... In other words, why didn't put MM1 if since it's already keyed numerically to that word that's coming out, why did they put anything there? Right, why have they written MM1 just to show us that it's... This is a comment that's only made in VHS.
But it isn't already keyed to that. It isn't keyed to that until it keys it to it. Keys you to it, and it keys you to it right here where it says MM1. Okay? Because the key does not equate to the superscript, although in this case it did.
Like
to prove that, go over to number 4 that says MM3139. And so it's superscript number 4 on our page. All they've done is just like when you do footnotes when you're writing a report. You start at the first word and you put 1, and maybe if you've got 4 footnotes, you've got 4 numbers. The next page, you start all over again with 1 again, and you go down through that. So don't confuse the superscript number with the Masorah Magna number, okay? The superscript number is just what word it refers to.
In other words, when we get this, when the Masorah Gedolah comes out, we would go by, for example, if we...
The MM number.
Subscript number 4, we go to the MM3139. Okay.
Entry to find that word, exactly. Okay.
Who's doing the big word?
The same people that put this out. The Wurttemberg Bible Society, I think, and some other people are involved. There's a whole list of them in the front of it, of the scholars that are involved in it. And it's the same people here. Yes?
I have a question on how these circles correspond to the numbers in the left-hand margin, because like there's 6 circles for the first line, and it looks like there's 6, you know, words in the reference. But if you count the number of circles, it adds up faster than the margin. Like by the 5th line, I got up to 18, and the margin was only up to 14. Does the circle stand for one word, or is it the word between the two circles?
It's both.
Yeah.
It's both. Right. It's both.
Depends where the circle is.
Depends on where the circle is.
Between two words, then it's...
Then it's the word that's in between, yeah. And sometimes it can be for a whole phrase,
yeah.
Several words.
So it could be one circle, and you skip over two circles.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
You got to be careful.
Right, and it explains exactly how that's laid out in the beginning. And I didn't take the pains to do that. I just wanted to tell you in general what those circles were for, but that's exactly what it means. In fact, there are 3 different things that the circles do. They're found on page... I can tell you the page if you want to have that. I probably won't take the time to read it. It's found on page Roman numeral 18 up at the top of the VHS and explains the circles. And there's 3 reasons for it. A single circle over one word, a single circle between 2 or more words, and that means the whole phrase is what's being commented on, and an additional circle between 2 words. So there's 3 different things, and it explains those totally on that page, okay, and the page before that actually. Starts on page 17 and ends up on page 18. Okay? So that will explain that. Okay, let's see if there's something else I can explain here. The reason I photocopied Jay Green is because if you don't know Hebrew, and even if you do, I think, in most cases, it's handy to be able to have an English translation of the words that you're looking at in the Hebrew, okay? And so look at the first word again. You see, looking at Jay Green's interlinear, that's been translated in the beginning. Notice how Jay Green's reads from the right to the left. Top line first, then bottom line. So in the beginning created God the heavens and the earth. Okay? Stop. And then verse 2, and the earth was without form and empty, and darkness on the darkness, I think it's on the watery, the deep. Stop. And the Spirit of God moving gently on the face of the waters. Stop, beginning of verse 3. So you've got a capital T. Then said God, let be light, and was light. Stop, beginning of verse 4. And saw God the light that supplied by Green, it was good, and separated God between the light and the darkness. Stop, beginning of verse 5. Did you follow that? How he had that? So it's handy to be able to have that, to be able to identify the Hebrew words that you're looking at there as to their translation. And so I would always use that, if you can, in conjunction with Kittles or the VHS edition when you're looking at words. So basically all you can do then is look up the verse that is in question and check any information that it says about it. Check any of the circles out and find out if that's merely statistical information that doesn't have to do with, you know, it's basically going to be statistical information that you'll find in the Masora Parva. But then at the bottom, you're going to find your critical apparatus. And your critical apparatus is listed by verse. That's how you find out, just like it is in UBS or any other Greek text. And so, in Genesis, for example, the only variant readings we have, if you're looking at Kittles, let's look at VHS. The only variant readings we have are in verse 1, and he's abbreviated that enough where you can tell that's probably Origins, Hexapla, the Origins copy of the Septuagint. In Origin, it's bare seat, and in another work, it's bare safe. Are you following? Everybody following where I'm at? Mm-hmm. Would you show Keith where that is there? We're looking at the critical apparatus in VHS. Okay, it says chapter 1, comma, 1. Now see, they didn't put it like we usually write our chapter verse references. We usually write them with a semicolon, don't we? And so we would go 1:1, chapter 1, verse 1. They go like this, 1:1. So chapter 1, verse 1, there is a variant reading, and it's right here, Origin. They've abbreviated it. And you say, well, why is it in Greek? Because that's a Greek version. See, that's a Greek translation of the Hebrew. So they gave you what the Greek word is in Origin, barasit. Okay, which actually is a transliteration, isn't it? Right. They simply transliterated the Hebrew into the Greek there instead of using genesios, which would be the Greek word for generations or origins or source or beginnings. So they transliterated it. Then VEL, and I don't know what version that refers to, but you could look it up in the key, has it barasate, a little bit different. Okay, and then even a variation from that. Samaria, that probably refers to the Samaritan Pentateuch, I suppose. I'm not sure. And there, they've transliterated the Hebrew for you, farasit, okay? So there's one part of the critical apparatus. Chapter 1, verse 1, there's that variation. Now, notice there's a parallel line, and then it's got a number 6, bold-faced print. Does everybody see that? That means that the next variant reading is found in verse 6 of the text, okay? And, of course, the numbers of the verses are found in the right-hand column along the text there, okay? And so you're looking down there, you see number 6 in the right-hand margin. Everybody see that? And then there's one word, and your colon, that's the end of verse 5, and then you've got the beginning of verse 6, and they put the number 6 right before that first word, haven't they? You see that, Keith? No, I'm showing you how to find it up in the text now.
Right.
There's the verse number 6, right? But it doesn't start here, because this is the end of verse 5. Then where it actually starts. Right? So that means that apparently there are not any alternate readings, or not any that they have record of anyway, for verses 2 through 5, right? Your only other alternate reading. So if your study was on Genesis 3:3, you'd be safe. No variant readings you'd have to worry about. You could say that the Masoretic text is sufficient there. There are no alternate readings. So that cannot be where the problem is in interpreting that verse. And that's what you would state, and you'd go on in your paper, see. So there's another one in verse in 6, and it's got it broken down there, and you would simply go through the various keys to find out what's being said. There's one in verse 7. By the way, notice for verse 6, let's go to verse 7, where it says A/A. Everybody see that? What that means is it's referring to the words between the letters AA that they have put in there. So let's go up to verse 7 and see if we can find that.
Last word in verse 7.
Yeah. Last word in verse 7.
54:8.
Yeah.
Drop down a line from where 7 is noted.
I can't find it now.
It's right before verse 8.
Right before verse 8. Okay, I see it. Right. The last, and it's also got a circle above it, which means that it's in the Masora Parva in the left there, right? Oh, by the way, one more thing on the Masora Parva. The way that they have separated the remarks is by a period, okay? And that's what those little dots are. And so the first remark, see, there's two circles for verse 7, isn't there, on that line that we're on. You see them? There's a circle between two words over to the right, and then there's a circle over the word we're looking at. Everybody see that? Well, how do you know which is which in the remarks in the Masora Parva? Well, you're reading right to left, aren't you? So the first one you're concerned with is not the one over our word, but the one two words to the right, correct? And so that one to the right is the one that's first shown by that Hebrew symbol there, and it's also got the superscript 17. Then there's a period, and that period means that's the end of that remark in the Masora Parva. And now you've started the next remark, which corresponds to the circle over the word that we're looking at, the last word in verse 7. Everybody see that? And so that's what those periods do. Those are the separations between the remarks in the Masora Parva. Now, looking again at this last word in verse 7 then, it's got an A and an A, and that's just their strange way of bracketing that one word for your consideration. Now let's go back to the footnote. What did it say? It said for verse 7, AA, in other words, for that word right there, compare, that's what CF is, the Latin confer, compare, chapter 6, let's see, what is it saying? No, compare verse 6, I think they're saying. A, word A. So you'd have to look at verse 6, and let's see if we can find the A there. It's the very last word again. Okay. And so they're trying to draw your attention between to a comparison or a contrast between those two words. And I don't know what they are, so I don't know what the contrast is here. I don't think it's the same word. Let me check. No. So there's a comparison there. Now, they've got a semicolon, and it says INS, which it probably means insert. The following Hebrew words probably means that. And then compare chapter 4, let's see, compare, probably means chapter 4. Verses 10, 12, 18, 21, and 31. I'd have to check that in the beginning. ET, which is probably be a version, 8, and then it's got a little mark there with a stand for, and I don't know if it's the Ethiopic version or whatever. So it's referring you to another part of the text. Is that the Septuagint?
Yeah.
Okay, in the Septuagint. Yes.
Chapter 4, Genesis doesn't have the verse 31.
Okay. Yes, it's probably verses in this chapter. Probably means compare verses 4, 10, 12, 18, 21. I'm not sure. You can check the preface and that would explain that better. But so the remarks then in the critical apparatus are separated by those parallel, that parallel sign. That separates the remarks, and they're listed by the verse number, and they're given there according to the version and what the words are in that version. Okay? And you've got the keys that explain all that. So there is the tedious procedure of finding alternate readings in the... We've got just a minute left. Rick.
Going up to verse 1, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 circles. You've got 4 commas.
separated by periods, right? And I remember we ran into that and Fred didn't have a comment on that either.
Well, you mean there's no period?
No, there's periods in the Star of Parliament,
mm-hmm.
but there's only four periods.
That's explained by my remark to Mark, I think it was, or maybe it was George a few minutes ago, where I said that sometimes they have two circles around a word that can just refer to that one word, and so it would refer to that one remark. Mm-hmm. Another time, if it's a phrase, I think they put it around over the middle of the middle word of that phrase or something, and it refers to that whole phrase. So it's not just one circle per remark then, always. If it's over one word, right in the middle of that word, then it is. And but if it's not, then it's a word enclosed or a phrase enclosed. And again, the page I referred to explain that more fully.
But it looks like, if it's a phrase, it looks like it's itself in a period. If it's not a phrase, it's just one word, and there's no period after that.
Uh-huh. That could be.
Where's the number?
Okay, that's the last bell. I hope I've at least unlocked a few mysteries from W. Hebraica and BHK and BHS. But with that, you can go ahead and turn your assignments in. And after looking over them during the week, I'll be able to come back and maybe make some comments on them. And so there'll be no assignment for this coming week. You'll be free. But I would suggest that you look through the things that I mentioned and read and familiarize yourself with them. Okay, go ahead and turn those in then.